Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mona, Rebecca. You know, it has been much easier connecting with both of you the last, we'll say, 6-7 months to do this podcast, because usually you are traveling so much.
I know, Mark. My goodness. I haven't had my feet on American soil for so long, ever, I think, at least since 2010 or 2011. You know, there was a time I was in China every month. And then after the China market started to go down, Rebecca, we were in the UAE, we were in India, we were in Europe, we were in the Stans and Russia, Africa. Yeah. Oh my God.
We were everywhere. And we had more trips planned moving forward. I mean, who knew that this was going to happen, Mona? I mean, you and I were just coming back from conferences. I was coming back from India late February, early March. You were coming back from the UK.
Yeah, I was in the UK early March. And that was when we were discussing about the conferences in Belgium. Hey, Mark, we do actually do our work at the same time. That's why we're superwomen.
I know. And we usually do a couple of shows when we can at once. And a lot of times they start off by where in the world has Mona and Rebecca been? But it's been different lately.
You know, now that we're kind of into this whole pandemic thing, and we know that it's not a question of a few months and we can just start traveling again. Because if you remember, right at the beginning of, you know, March, April, we were talking about moving conferences to end of July, and then maybe September, and then maybe November. No, I think we have at least another 6 months to a year of not traveling, which means that we are dependent on virtual conferences.
Yeah, we have these virtual conferences now, but traveling, it gave us a different edge at one, you know, at certain points. I know we were a full-fledged law firm. We still did our work, but we went out there. We went out there to meet with clients. We went out there because we felt that there was a different aspect to meeting them face to face. We were able to get out and understand our clients better.
Right. Especially if we're doing a client's project, because many a time we would be discussing projects. And when you go there face to face and you see what they're doing in their respective countries, it makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that, Rebecca, it has been nice not to travel so much.
Yes, it has. It has
saved money. We've saved a lot of money because, you know, putting it straightforward, you know, Mark, it's not cheap. When you're talking about airfare and when you're talking about being out
hotels
of the office
and meals.
Hotels and yeah, it is. There is a balance to everything, but people want to understand, does EB5 work with virtual conferences? And I think that EB5 is such an area where personal contacts is so important that maybe it can work, but at some point you still have to make the relationship work also.
Yeah, but Mona, we've been discussing it with so many of our colleagues, right? And they said they've stopped all conferences. They're waiting for travel to reopen before they do any other conferences. They're not even thinking about virtual conferences. But is this really the right way to go?
You know, there's arguments pro and against it. I think it's whatever you make work that will work. If you take these conferences as just an introduction and just something to keep your face afloat, then yes, I think it will work. My personal opinion is when the travel begins again, we'll be back in the travel. But for the moment, I think we can make do with virtual conferences and Zoom. I mean, we never use Zoom video as much as we do now.
Yes, I think overall we'll see a collaboration between both the in-person traveling and meeting with everyone and with the virtual conferences.
Yeah, but and also it's very important to understand who is doing the virtual conference. I mean, how much access do they have to the market? Is their media marketing good? Who are they relying on to get the word out? Because that's key here.
Yeah. And not only that, the setup of the conference. I mean, we've experienced ourselves, Mona. We've been through virtual conferences from the beginning of March till now, and we have seen a difference. And you know what to choose now, what conferences are the right ones to go to.
Yeah. But at the same time, there are not many people or not many conferences which focus on EB5.
No, Mona, not at all. And as we say, it's the quality that we're looking for these virtual conferences.
Before we go much further, and then before we really can give everybody an analysis of what we believe is the whether or not virtual conferences work for EB5, I thought let's bring on some professionals in the field, people who have been doing not just virtual conferences, but conferences for some time, and ask them some really detailed questions, some probing questions.
That's right, Mona. That's why today we have Mackenzie Penton and Ashley Casey from IASA joining us for today's discussion. So Mackenzie, Ashley, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Rebecca.
So guys, I know that you have been doing conferences for many years. I mean, even before we get into the virtual conferences, let me just ask you, Mackenzie, you've been traveling all over the world with IASA's conferences.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, IAUSA has a mandate to provide our members with business development opportunities, both in the U.S. and overseas. Our global banquet series was going quite well. I was actually with Rebecca in Ahmedabad, India in February before the wheels came off the cart, so to speak. So yeah, we travel quite a good deal internationally to some of the largest markets, India, Vietnam, China, and elsewhere. Certainly things have changed a little bit, though, this year.
When you do these overseas conferences, Mackenzie, first of all, how do you choose which country to go to?
Yeah, well, you know, some of the countries are pretty easy to target, China being one of them. But, you know, IAUSA, one of our core focuses is research and data analytics. So we take a deep dive into our processing trends and other data points that we receive from USCIS and elsewhere to really determine which markets are critical for us as an association and by extension, our members. It's never necessarily an easy choice to make, you know, with a finite amount of time in the year, but we do try and go to as many of the largest EB5 markets out there.
Ashley, what were you seeing from an attendance standpoint pre-COVID?
We've really been seeing a steady attendance for our in-person conferences. And I think Mackenzie can speak more to the ones overseas since I don't go there, but our overseas events have been very well attended. And I think as time has gone on and people are looking for more inroads to those markets, the overseas ones have really grown over the last few years. But our domestic conferences have been strong and we've had steady attendance over the last several years. And so obviously now with COVID, it was a little bit disappointing to see that we weren't going to be able to host some in-person conferences this year, but overall, they've been going well.
Yeah, well, Rebecca and I have been to many different conferences overseas. We try not to keep to EB5 conferences alone, although, of course, we do. We always try to support IAUSA wherever you guys are. And we have been out to several of the places with EB5 Investors Magazine. But Rebecca and I tend to try and do the local conferences because we find that their media marketing is a little better.
I think, Mona, if I can jump in, this is Mackenzie. That's why IAUSA, we really work collaboratively with on-the-ground partners as much as possible. In particular, we like to partner with local chambers of commerce or other like-minded membership associations. You know, we have strategic partnerships in place with the Korean Immigration Association, the Taiwan Immigration Consultants Association, Johannesburg, South Africa Chamber of Commerce, and others that we've really been able to collaborate well with because you're right. We're in the U.S., it becomes difficult for us to really productively run on-the-ground marketing a lot of the time. So working with strong local partners in these markets is really critical to their success. And that's what really drives our really strong attendance for the events.
So when you say strong local markets, you're talking about markets relating to what?
Well, I'm speaking specifically to EB5 investor markets. The folks that we like to work with overseas tend to be either those organizations that work directly in the industry, you know, membership associations for agents, for example, or we've also seen some really strong success recently kind of branching out beyond EB5 into the larger markets and pools of investors, you know, and that's where we work with chambers of commerce who have much larger focus areas than just EB5 or investment. And they're able to really broaden our scope and bring in interested participants from a whole host of different areas.
Well, Mackenzie, let me ask you this. Are you saying that because you're opening it up to the virtual conferences, or have you been seeing that with the in-person conferences?
Oh, yeah. No, we've been working with international partners for years now on in-person events. Certainly now with going virtual for the past year, our attendance has really been facilitated by our local partners. I think often when you're marketing an event, whether that's an EB5 event or a larger event or, you know, an event on another topic, it's difficult at times to make sure that your target audiences understand and appreciate what it is you're trying to do without a friendly face. So a chamber that they might be a member of or a membership association that they're engaged with. So that's what we like to do, whether it's in person or virtual. We like to go in with a partner that knows the clients that we're trying to reach.
That's very important. That's very important, Mackenzie, because Rebecca and I were on a virtual conference recently where we noticed that we were just speaking to other attendees and we weren't speaking to any outside person. It really felt like a waste.
Yeah. And I think that part of that, at least in my mind, is the quality over the quantity of attendees. I think it's more or less, and I don't mean this to be glib, but more or less easy to get 500 people to register for something that's free or virtual. But what's hard to do is to get the correct people to register. And I think, Mona, not putting words in your mouth, but I think you would be much happier with 5 people rather than 500, so long as those 5 people have a reasonable expectation for being at that event and having a desire to connect with you as a sponsor or a speaker. So that's what we really focus on, is the quality of attendees. And again, I think that's where our local partners can really help, because they know these communities and they know these target audiences.
So, Mackenzie, when we go overseas, as you know, we often speak with people. It's all about introductions. We all understand that. But when we get introduced, you meet a person, they speak to you for a few minutes, they get to see you, there is a vibe there, and you hand over a card, an exchange cards rather, and that's it. But that meeting could be very important. On a virtual conference, it's much harder to get that connection. Have you put anything into your virtual programs to allow introductions of this nature?
Yeah, we certainly have. And you're right. I mean, I think a lot of the work that goes into overseas events from a sponsorship standpoint is getting that contact information. And we appreciate that. So, you know, all of the virtual programming that we've done, you know, sponsors in their own right have access to some of the contact information just right off the bat, and thanks for their support. But also, I've noticed that the virtual platforms that we've been offering have been, in a weird way, a lot more interactive than I notice at in-person events. You know, I see a lot more questions coming in, for example, during the panels that we host. A lot more interested investors or service providers overseas that really do engage or perhaps feel more comfortable asking their relevant questions or sharing their details with panelists at the event. So there's certainly that. And I think that sponsors are finding really good value from that. And of course, you're not spending a whole heck of a lot of money on booths and backdrops and all that stuff. So I think that there's value there for sure.
That's true, Mackenzie, but your booths and backdrops also do act as an element to attract a person to you that you might have missed.
Yeah, that's true, Mona. There's a reason all that booth flair is expensive.
I think, though, again, I look at the quality over quantity again, because there's no guarantee to say that you're attracting the right people to your booth. And more often than not, at least when I go to events, I go to the booth because they have a free pen, you know, or some candy or whatever they might be offering. So having the right people in the room, and I think, you know, perhaps to backtrack a little bit on IUSA ourselves, you know, we're a membership association. We have a community already built into what we do, and it's connecting our members in the U.S. and around the world with other members and other organizations like IIUSA that can help them, not just for the one investor, but for the long term, that can bring them in business for years. And so I think, again, building up a virtual community or an in-person community is really important for us, and then by extension, our members and sponsors.
Yeah, the other issue that we have seen, and Ashley, I'll ask you on this one, we do look at the content, because if, for example, there is, let's take an AILA conference, for example, some of the major AILA conferences, you won't really find too many sophisticated investors going to that one, because many of the subject matters are very basic, unless it's a more of a sophisticated AILA conference. Or if you find a conference which is done by, say, Bosco or another overseas person, if it's a very basic area, you know, people don't always attend. How's your educational programming?
I think we, especially over the last couple of years, because we were getting that same feedback about the panel topics were maybe a little bit too basic, that we've really tried to dig into the topics that are timely right now. What are people talking about in the industry, both the professionals of EB-5 and the people who are interested in investing in EB-5, and looking at those topics and how we can dig into those and bring experts to have conversations about them. So as usual, redeployment, especially now, is a big topic. And we try to bring topics like that up and look at them from fresh perspectives as the topic has evolved over the last year, since maybe the last time we had a discussion on it on panels. And we try to bring those topics in so that they're interesting both for the people who would be members of IIUSA, but also other people outside of our membership who have a stake in EB-5, whether it's a potential investor or someone who's looking to use EB-5 in their community for a development project or otherwise. So we really try to listen to what the industry and the community is telling us about what are the interesting topics of right now, and really dig into those and find the right people to put on those panels to bring that discussion to life, so that we aren't just on the basic level of conversation, but really, really digging into the nitty gritty of those.
And Mona, I think when we're looking at in-person or virtual events, we have to look at it from two sides. What Ashley's talking about, you know, getting this really in-depth programming for industry experts such as yourself and others to really get substantive value from the events is really, really important. Now, on the other side of it, though, when we're talking about an event in Taiwan or a virtual event focused on India, it is also important to get some of that more basic level information out there to investors and their representatives, because I'm sure, as you know, there are often events where people aren't providing the most factual information to potential clients or investors. So I look at it from that standpoint as well, where it's really important to get basic, you know, what is EB-5? How does it work? What can I expect from the process out to overseas participants? Because, you know, that's critical to our sponsors' success, and certainly as an association that prides ourselves on best practices and ensuring the industry and the investors are educated, it's really important to also have that component.
And this is Ashley, real quick, just to piggyback on that. I think that's sort of where our domestic and international events differ, particularly when we're in person. But I think even with the virtual events we've been doing this year, is that those international events really target to educate people about the EB-5 program, make sure the correct facts about the program are out there. Whereas our domestic side of programming is more about the timely topics of now and what is going on in the industry, and really getting those in-depth analyses and conversations about topics that are of importance to everyone right now.
So what is it that can we look ahead for IUSA coming in the fall, coming into 2021?
Well, we're really excited about our 2020 virtual industry forum. We were luckily able to pivot to this online event. It's going to be a two-week webinar series. We specifically programmed and scheduled it this way so that people can feel more free to attend all of the webinars and not be sort of boxed into 2 or 3 days of, you know, 9 to 5 panels that they have to or want to listen in on. So it's spread out over 2 weeks with, depending on the day, 2 to 3 panels per day. And we've worked in some breaks for people so they can feel free to grab lunch or catch up on emails and make phone calls. So we're hoping that the schedule, the way that we did it, is more conducive to especially everyone's sort of work, home life that we're all trying to balance right now. But on top of that, we have a lot of great programming. We are looking at post-election outlook from our advocacy standpoint. We have 2 great guest of honors, Sarah Kendall from the Immigrant Investor Program Office at USCIS and Charlie Oppenheim from the Department of State. And we have a lot of great in-depth panels, opportunity zones, real estate workouts, redeployment, RFE and denial trends. We have just a lot of really great programming. So I'm really happy with the way we were able to lay this out, that even though we can't all meet in person, I think there's still some really great programming that people are going to find a lot of value in. And I'm hoping everyone tunes in and sees what we are bringing to the table for our virtual forum.
Well, But this sounds wonderful as far as an education is concerned. But what are the questions I have again? If I was somebody who wanted to find an investor, would this be a forum, Mackenzie, that I should go to? I mean, is this a forum, it sounds to me, and I'm going to be a little critical here. It's wonderful, don't get me wrong, but it's a forum to educate. It's not a forum to, you know, market.
Well, I think in order for you to productively market, Mona, the first step is education. You know,
good answer. Good answer.
Certainly can appreciate the point you're making there. And to a certain extent, you're right. You know, as Ashley noted earlier, our domestic events tend to be more education focused. They tend to be more geared towards U.S. attendees. Now, with that said, we just formalized a partnership with the PhD Chamber of Commerce based in New Delhi, who's helping us promote to Indian investors.
And are these people going to be at the conference?
Well, they're not going to be there. They're going to be virtually there. And
virtually there. But if I wanted to get in touch with this person or someone the New Delhi Association brought in, Chamber of Commerce brought in, how would I do that?
Sponsors for our events, they have access to a lot of the information on our delegates and our participants. So, you know, anyone, of course, is welcome to sponsor our events and participate in that capacity. And, you know, with sponsorship, we really look at it as it's supporting the work overall of IUSA. You know, we're not a for-profit organization out there hosting events just to host events. We're utilizing that revenue and that sponsorship capital to extend and expand the mission of EB5 and help both members and investors. But to your question, yes. I mean, all of our virtual platforms, there's a reasonable expectation to have information, contact information from investors or from their representatives in these markets.
Well, Mackenzie, Rebecca here, I want to go back to what Mona and you were discussing about, and with Ashley, a whole educational program. As an investor, and if I'm a part of the India Commerce Chamber of Commerce, and if I'm part of these programs and I'm coming in to learn about EB5, how is IUSA going to engage these investors, these groups that are coming in? Who are sponsoring? What speakers are coming in who have the quality to speak on these subjects that we were discussing?
Right. And how do you know? How are you qualifying these? What's your quality control?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, they're all members of the association. IIUSA is not in the business of advocating or promoting any one member, but we do represent over 300 member organizations around the world, all of whom have agreed to abide by our best practices as well as our code of conduct. So at its very basic level, we're providing a platform for investors to hear from those groups who are experts in the industry and those who are supportive of the only EB5 membership and advocacy association. So again, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that every industry expert will be speaking at our event. Of course not. But it does guarantee that the people who are participating have agreed to abide by a set of standards to provide their best efforts at ensuring that investors and agents and people in the U.S. also, you know, are well-educated and well-informed. As a nonprofit membership association, that's what Ashley and I and the rest of the team work towards every day to ensure that investors have the correct information they need. And then, you know, at the same time that sponsors have valuable business development platforms as well.
Well, it certainly is an advantage for a regional center, I will say, that they're not spending so much money in traveling. And of course, it's a huge difference as well in your overall health, because we're not jumping on a plane and going to a new place every month like we were doing just prior to this year. But at the same time, Mackenzie, how would you answer this? It's no substitute for meeting face to face.
There's certainly things you cannot do virtually. But at the same time, I think that there's things you cannot do at a conference.
That's a good response. That's a very good response. Yeah, you can't expect to close an investor at a conference.
Right.
And this is Ashley, if I can just jump in really quick. Sometimes at conferences, there's people you want to talk to and you spend 2 days chasing them around, trying to find them, trying to get a moment to talk to them. And I think sometimes with these virtual forums, it gives you an opportunity to have a more focused audience, more captive audience, because even though they may only be there for 1 hour or however long that panel is, they are captive in that moment when they're tuned into that webinar versus at a conference when you may be just sort of missing each other, ships passing in the night at a conference. So I think that's another benefit to the virtual forum.
This is Mackenzie, if I can jump in as well. I think it was you, Rebecca, or perhaps Mona, that said earlier on that a whole large component of in-person events is just collecting business cards.
Yeah, I mentioned that to you.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what you're doing by participating in a virtual conference or one of our virtual overseas oriented events. That's what you're doing is getting the virtual business cards, making the initial point of contact. I know you're not closing investors at your booth in India or Vietnam or wherever else you might be. You're doing that after you've had time to really talk things through with the potential investor and they understand the process and as well as your firm to a greater extent. So it's really, again, it's just the start is the virtual event that we're hosting. And I think others probably in the industry are hosting as well.
Well, we do see this as being something which is going to stay. First of all, we don't see it going away for at least another year. And thereafter, once people get used to and they are able to meet and greet, as you say, yeah, the cost benefits, the health benefits, the time benefits, that certainly will encourage people to continue with these virtual forums.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mona, on that we don't see it as just temporary in nature. We're not just filling it in. I think it's going to slowly, it's going to be a combination of both virtual and in-person meetings later. I mean, it's still going to be 7-8 months down the road where I think we might be meeting in person. But I think it's going to be that collaboration. And it's great because like we were saying, Mackenzie, Ashley, virtual conferences, it seems like you're getting almost the same benefits you would if you were traveling to a conference in person. You're still getting to see a booth, let's say, for instance. You're still getting to get the person's information. You can still listen into the panels. You can ask questions. And I feel like sometimes it's even better that you get to ask questions in there as the panelists can actually gear the questions towards the audience versus waiting till the end to ask your questions. And then sometimes you run out and don't even have time to ask the person. And you still get to meet face-to-face, whether it's Zoom or some other media. I think this we will see a lot more of going into the future.
Yeah, but it also depends on the other side. I think it would also depend on the other side, the other countries, and how good they are coming out onto these media events. Because yes, I can see Indians doing it because India is very high-tech, but not some of these other countries.
Sure. I mean, there's definitely a lot to be said, just sort of going back to what Rebecca was saying about the convenience factor of attending a conference online. It gives you the opportunity to attend something and not have to factor in the cost and time of travel. You know, normally for our in-person domestic conferences, let alone the overseas ones, you know, someone's looking at 2 to 3 days away from their office, from their family, and the virtual setup gives you an opportunity to dial in when it's convenient for you and not have to travel anywhere.
That's a huge plus. I mean, right. we know because we're out every month and at the same time we're running our office. We do understand that. And of course, Rebecca, we've been to a lot of hit and miss. You know, that's the thing with conferences. They're not always a success each time you go.
Exactly. And I think you have to look at it from both. In person, I went to India last year. Mackenzie, you brought it up earlier. We had to start a conference late because an actress passed away. And it wasn't even in India. She passed away in Dubai, Sridevi. And because of that, it was a whirlwind in India. Traffic, I mean, people couldn't make it on time. We didn't get the audience that we were searching for. And with a virtual conference, at least I didn't spend the time and effort getting to India and doing this and not getting to meet anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the key points, Rebecca. It's, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves and say not every event's going to be a success. We know that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to go out there and overpromise every single time and underdeliver. We put together events that we think realistically have the right partners, the right supporters internationally. And you know, we put our best foot forward every time. But there's going to be events where the attendance wasn't as high as we thought, or the partner didn't come through to the extent that we thought they would. But you know, when it's a much smaller overall investment, that certainly helps from a sponsor standpoint. But also, you know, these events, if done correctly, you know, you're talking 7, 8, 9 months down the road when we can do conferences again. By that point, I really hope that this has become a key component of people's marketing strategies.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what we are going to try and see. But we have to educate the public because the EB5 is not a virtual conference platform type of industry. It's not like some of the other industries. So here,
I actually jump in really quick there because sure. I think in some ways it is the perfect industry for virtual platform, because as we all know, the EB5 industry changes rapidly. There's a constant evolution of our program, and there's always some new thing that is happening that people want to talk about. And so I think the virtual platform gives us the opportunity to be a little bit more nimble. And when really important topics come up that people want to talk about, the virtual gives us that opportunity to put a webinar on quickly and have people there together talking about whatever that timely topic might be, and versus having to wait 6 months to meet in person and talk about it there.
Yeah, Ashley, I really do agree. I think that virtual is here to stay, and I think it's going to be a key component if we can get it right. If we can get these conferences to the T with the educational side and allowing people to get the introductions. You have one coming up, right?
We do. It is in the early part of November, from November 10th to the 19th. And I know that sounds like a really long event, but it is actually only 5 days. We spread it out over the course of 2 weeks. So we have panels on the 10th, 12th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. If you're looking for more information, it's on iiusa.org. And we certainly look forward to seeing everyone at that conference in November.
Yeah, thanks for that. We'll be sure to put a link to the 2020 iiusa Virtual Industry Forum in the show notes. And thank you again, Ashley Casey and Mackenzie Penton, for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for having us. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
So, Mona, Rebecca, I know the topic of this episode has been revolving around, do these virtual conferences work for EB5? And I think Ashley and Mackenzie have done a pretty good job in answering that. And you know, we've been producing this podcast for nearly 5 years. And for listeners that have wanted more from us, well, we're not going to disappoint. We're going to be doing something a little different, at least for us, a little new, certainly for us. We're going to start live streaming some of our episodes in a way that you can not only watch us live on video, but ask questions as well. And for those that can't join us live, don't worry, you'll still be able to get the show, the podcast via the audio stream, the way you've previously enjoyed us. As well as you'll probably have the ability to watch the replay of the video, flubs and all. So if you want to get updates on when we will be streaming live, head on over to Mona Shaw and Associates website at mshawlaw.com and subscribe to our email newsletter.
Thanks, guys. And we look forward to seeing you all
in live and in person.
Yeah, actually, see you in person. Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.